Good day. My name is Gary Kurtzhals, and I am today's host for Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of the operations group at the National Warfighting Training Center as part of the NTC Warrior Chronicles. The Gauntlet drives warfighting by talking to leaders from our joint force about the crucible of ground combat, leadership, training, and most importantly, fighting at the crown jewel of our army. Today, I'm sitting down with Command Sergeant Major Alex Polito, also known as Gray Wolf 7, the 3rd Armored Brigade Combat Team, 1st Cavalry Division's Senior Enlisted Advisor, to discuss duties of our beloved non-commissioned officers, standard operating procedure, validation and revalidation, and diving deeper in how the command team of the Gray Wolf Brigade empowered their NCO Corps. Sergeant Major Polito, you know, a hearty thanks from Operations Group, Colonel Divin and myself, for you allowing us to spend some of your time talking about warfighting.
Great. No, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people that know you. You are one of the finest armor NCOs I've met in my career. But just for the broader audience, can you kind of describe yourself, who you are professionally, who you are when you're just Alex, and give us some of your dynamics?
My name's Alex Polito. I've been married for 22 years to my awesome wife, Clara. I have 3 children, 26, 21, and 19, and a grandchild. We've raised the kids together, and we've had an amazing time in the Army. Now, professionally, I've spent 22 years in the Army. I've been fortunate to have been in Fort Cavazos multiple times. I was a prior Gray Wolf soldier as a platoon sergeant. I was also a first sergeant in the Cav over in Iron Horse. And then I became a battalion command sergeant major in Blackjack, officially hitting all 3 of the maneuver brigades. And then I have the privilege now of being Gray Wolf 7, ensuring and helping move the war machine that is Gray Wolf.
So it sounds to me like when it comes to maneuver brigades in the 1st Cavalry Division, you have all the rings.
I believe so. And I have earned the rings so far.
And you've probably got to see some good and bad from all the units, because as we talk, how critical leadership is at moving units forward. Sometimes we see units kind of going on like a little bit of a wave where they're really good, published SOPs, empowered NCO Corps, and then going through like the rebuilding process with the revalidation, the onboarding of our new NCOs, and just getting on board with the team of how that unit does business.
I've seen, to your point, right, I've seen both what I would also describe as good TTPs for leaders to use as they move forward, whether it's deploying an organization or coming here to the National Training Center and using the skills that we gain as we do our training progression, come and execute here. One of the best, if not the only place where you can bring an armor unit and execute.
Absolutely. Throughout my career, I've got 9 rotations where I got to play the Blue 4 out here, from PFC all the way to Command Sergeant Major. And I always tell people, we say it's the crown jewel when we're here. However, when my time was out in the force, I was always looking forward to my combat training center rotations because it is world-class training. You know, you and I spoke in the desert a couple times that, you know, you can't hide in the desert. You're either good at your task, you're capable of learning and refining, or you are just blunt force trauma trained. And, you know, I always laugh. I came out here as a tank commander many, many years ago. And the only thing that I had got to achieve as part of the intensive training cycle was to shoot gunnery. So I learned so much. And then as I got a chance to kind of float through in your job previously, almost a year ago, I learned so much. And what I really got out of it was how critical an empowered and informed NCO Corps is. And that's kind of the topic that we're going to talk about today. You know me, I know you. Both Alex and I are a fan of our non-commissioned officer corps. Professionally developed, some of the best equipment in the world, and they're charged with the ability to train and then deliver combat-capable small teams, crews, and platoons to commanders. And, you know, as I kind of look at it, you know, non-commissioned officers, they serve in vital leadership positions within our military framework. They bridge the gap between enlisted soldiers and commissioned officers, ensuring that commands from higher ranks are effectively communicated and executed on the ground. Their role encompasses guiding subordinates, mentoring junior soldiers, focused on winning the first fight of our next war. NCOs are essential in that training, the preparation of their soldiers, and providing hands-on instructive and direct supervision during missions and exercise. They also play a critical role in maintaining readiness, implementing standard operating procedures, and ensuring operational effectiveness. NCOs significantly influence soldier morale and resiliency by building trust and rapport. I'd like you to kind of elaborate from your position, you know, the senior enlisted soldier in Grey Wolf, your vision that you empower your subordinate NCOs to drive action.
That's a very powerful statement, right? Empowered NCO Corps, because that is what we have in Grey Wolf, right? And that is due to Colonel Arnston and the rest of officers, non-commissioned officers, pushing that to the NCO levels. What I see in our NCO Corps now is the fact that we're doing NCO PDs, LPDs to ensure we stay on top of, to your point, some of the SOPs, standard operating procedures. But to me, an empower NCO is one NCO that make the success of its unit based on the preparation that NCO does, so that the commander has the ability to focus on the mission and not on the smaller things. So from my foxhole here in Grey Wolf, NCOs are always empowered to not only do the right thing, take charge, and ensure that we are completing tasks to standards, and we hold our soldiers accountable as well as our leaders. So what I see as an empowered NCO Corps is getting an NCO to have that buy-in, which they do, right? Have that buy-in and ensure that they know why they're doing the mission and that they're passionate about it. That drives that train, that you would call it a train of training. And we ensure that our lower enlisted soldiers, or if you would, our soldiers that are the heavy lifters, can actually perform their duties and learn from them so that we can create more NCOs through education, which is the NCOPDs and LPDs.
Yeah, and that's part of the competitive advantage that United States Army has over some of our adversaries and some of our allies, is just how our NCO management is conducted, you know, with professional institutional development. And then your LPD series that I assume are focused on the critical tasks that you consider inside of the Grey Wolf Brigade.
Yes, a lot of our critical tasks, our NCOPDs are driven to doing the things that you do routinely, that you do them correctly. We find where the hole in our swing could be, and we fix it, mitigate it, to your point, by training and education, whether it is at the schoolhouse or is in the Grey Wolf's NCOPD LPD series. But we drive at those actions to ensure that we train more leaders and we make NCOs as other NCOs move out into other positions. So that is where we focus, is on the education for the non-commissioned officers so they could be at par with their officer counterpart, so that we can actually drive together instead of driving in separate directions.
No, 100%. Super powerful statement. You pick the career field. Every career field has their challenges. And, you know, inside of our Army, I'm just curious, before we kind of move on to our next subject, what do you think is the hardest role that our NCOs are filling today?
From my position, I think the hardest role that they're filling is, you know, the unfortunate role of having to step up one level up, and the education when it comes to knowing the standard at that point might not be there, which is why we're helping that by ensuring that the NCOs are educated through the NCO LPD series or through being sent to the actual NCOES schools. So I believe we're asking young staff sergeants to be platoon sergeants when they don't have the experience yet. It is up to us to ensure they have the experience through education and the knowledge through experience based on time.
Absolutely. You know, you and I share almost the same time in service. And I think one of the interesting topics when we look at our NCO Corps and how we develop is, I was a young staff sergeant when a first sergeant told me that my job was to train my subordinates to one day take over my job. And that couldn't be truer today. You know, just as how we look at our YMAF cycles, et cetera. Every war machine kind of operates at a 20% of floating our NCOs up, but it's got to be so rewarding to you too when you see a staff sergeant running a platoon or a sergeant first class running a company and just doing phenomenal work.
Absolutely. We have that happening right now in Grey Wolf, where you have sergeant first classes who are frocked and they are performing the duties of first sergeants as they wait their time, so they get promoted in that position and that time counts for them. And it makes you extremely proud to actually see, you know, these young NCOs coming up on the ranks and taking the reins and knowing that one day, to your point, you and I are going to be training our replacements. Quick story, as I was at the Ruba, there was a First Sergeant Bell who kept looking at me. And I'm like, where do I know this young gentleman from? And so I asked him. Turned out that this young, well, now an E8, was a private when I was in Grey Wolf as a platoon sergeant in 112, and then later became an FSC Sergeant First Class Frog First Sergeant when I worked with them in 1-6. And to see him out here as fully complete with his KD time as a Harsh Stripe First Sergeant, most likely go to the academy, Sergeant Major's Academy, that makes you extremely proud to know that you had maybe a helping hand in bringing up those NCOs in one day take over for us.
I'm glad you brought that up because it is always enjoyable. It's always that awkward look, right? Like you just, somebody's looking at you, they got iPro on and a hat. You haven't seen them for a decade, and just to see how that individual personally and professionally has grown and that they're executing duties for you. It's one of my favorite parts of me being in the Army. Switching gears a little bit, you know, we're still staying with our NCO Corps thing. I'd like to talk a little bit about standard operating procedures for a minute. I believe that they are the most critical document inside of a unit. I believe it is one document that it shows commanders' empowerment and dedication to the NCO Corps and really creates synergy if used right. You know, SOPs are designed to standardize processes and tasks within any organization. We standardize how the unit operates through the use of organizational best practices. This gives each individual soldier a reference to understand how they operate and how specific and critical combat tasks are to be accomplished for each specific unit. As the operating environment continues to change, new challenges will arise. You know, the SOP is a living, breathing document. A review of unit SOPs is necessary to adapt, and getting those critical updates is one thing I think sometimes we struggle with. With that said, what are some of the ways the NCOs in the Grey Wolf Brigade validates and then revalidates their SOPs?
I'm glad you brought that up. We're actually going through now the lessons learned throughout the rotation, things that work, things that didn't, and how we're going to solidify that through the NCOs, because it's great to put something in an SOP, but if it's not tried by a non-commissioned officer, then we really don't know that it works. So we're taking that in Grey Wolf, we're taking that to the NCO Corps. We are seeing what worked during the rotations, especially when talking about different units. They're just different types of units. So we're looking at what worked. We implied it as the non-commissioned officers, and now we're going to solidify it. When we get back to home station, one of our many NCO PD series is going through our SOPs, getting out a pen and paper, writing down what worked, what didn't, based on the SOPs we brought out here, of course. We validated them, meaning they either they worked and they didn't, and now we're going back to refine them before we solidify them as a true SOP for the next fight to come.
No, absolutely. My time as a sergeant major, like, I have seen some phenomenal SOPs, and I have seen some SOPs that were rather outdated. You know, as I always tell my friends and my peers, it is so evident from the outside looking in when you see an empowered NCO Corps based off an SOP that has been revalidated for the current team. And I always bring that back. I'm like, hey, let me see your SOP, Sergeant Major. And if I look at it and it's more than 12 months old, I'm like, hey, man, like, you're missing an opportunity. I don't know what the right answer is. And if there was a right answer, it'd probably be in our doctrine. I kind of look at it as like a culminating exercises. Like, part of your recovery should be like sitting down as a group, professional NCOs, and kind of going through exactly what you said. Open it up to page 32. Hey, we tried this. It didn't work. Put a line through it. This is how we're going to do business. And then my favorite thing is getting rid of all the old SOPs and get the new ones in production. But that is quite the monumental effort for a brigade.
It is. And I agree with you 100%. I think what we do need to do is get down to that level of writing it down, asking the questions, but not just bringing your senior NCOs. Is bringing the younger NCOs, your sergeants, maybe even your corporals that had to execute that. One of my favorite moments in the box was when I came up on one of my medics and I asked, why are you setting up the litters that way? And the response was, because that's what was in our SOPs. However, we needed to change something just slightly to make it work a little better. So I'm bringing that young NCO to the headquarters and I'm going to have him explain exactly how he did it, so that we can better use it across the entire formation. So that was a very proud moment there, where a young non-commissioned officer found a problem in an issue, fixed it instead of just complaining about it. And now we're going to make it the standard because it works.
100%. What I think I heard is we have a young NCO that is using the SOP. However, maybe some of the stuff in the SOP quite hadn't been updated as we move into this LISCO fight. And, you know, this the term LISCO is not new. I think both of us were wearing a different rank when it kind of came out. And, you know, just driving that through our NCO Corps, hey, we're not in the business of COIN anymore. You know, we're not in the business of direct action like we are large-scale combat operations. And the medic topic is so great. And I'm curious, as you kind of dug through that SOP, did you see anything about extended field care?
So I did, through the SOPs, right, looking at them for me and validating them even as we're actually already executing, I can see where that NCO had that logic on, hey, we need to change certain things. Of course, he came about it professionally, and now we're going to write about it. So I think that we lose the relevancy of the rotation if we don't write about it. So we're going to write about it. We're going to put it in our SOPs. It's going to be established. It's going to be revalidated. And we're going to take that moving forward so that we can make things even better.
That's awesome to hear. Because, I mean, you're a level 4 combatives guy. I'm just an old tanker. Like, we know how amazing the human body is. Like, the amount of punishment it can take and survive. And prolonged field care in SOPs down at your, you know, your young medic and your medical NCOs, like in the next fight, has the potential to save so many lives and also kind of regenerate that combat power once they heal. And that's exciting to hear. For everybody kind of out there listening, you know, if you're looking for something to go look around through your Charlie Med and your medical platoons, I would tell you to take a look at what is your SOP for prolonged field care. And if you're looking for options, I don't know if they have the best answer, but the Gray Wolf Brigade has some TTPs they can share with you. All right, kind of moving on to our last topic, and it's my favorite. You know, you and I, we've been NCOs for a long time, both been senior NCOs now, longer than we were actually junior NCOs. And my favorite term when I talk with my commander, regardless of what level I've been, is like, are you going to empower me and your core, or are you going to not, and you're going to run it through the officers, the commanders, through the operations process? Because the Army's kind of a dual system. There's the officer chain of command with the operations process, and then there's the core of non-commissioned officers. And, you know, some of the most powerful things that have ever happened to me is like, sir, I want to fix this, or sergeant major, or first sergeant, or sergeant, like, I need you to fix it. I'm like, absolutely. I need you to empower me. And some of those empowerments that I got to see at the brigade level is like the brigade commander during a meeting or an operations process saying, hey, Gray Wolf 7 is going to fix this for me. But that's rather easy for us because you and I get the ability to work with phenomenal commanders. But then we get down to that platoon level. You got a lieutenant, sergeant first class working for him. You got staff sergeants. In your professional opinion, how do you see empowerment at Echelon?
Empowerment for me, especially here in the Gray Wolf Brigade, is ensuring we give a mission to our non-commissioned officers, or we give them a problem set and we allow them to work through it. A perfect example, Colonel Armiston, you know, he's an amazing commander, an amazing tactician. He gave us the sustainment fight. He allowed and empowered every non-commissioned officer in his brigade to come through, do the sustainment fight, asked questions, and gave his guidance, and then let us loose. And I believe, based on what you saw in the NTC here in the box, we were pretty successful, and that all came through NCO channels, lock packs, LRPs, medevacs, casevacs. All of that was an empowerment from our officers to the non-commissioned officers. I don't think we'll let anybody down, truly, because we're able to successfully never run out of fuel, food, or bullets, if you would. Right? If you can bring fuel, if you can bring rounds and bullets, you can bring food. And we had that, I think, more than I normally have out in the field. Again, to the fuel point, we stretched our locks pretty far. We were able to maintain that fight. And it was all through the empowerment of the non-commissioned officers all the way down to our corporals that were doing the jobs either one level up or they were filling in the holes in the swings as a brigade. To me, that is the most strongest message that an officer can send, is say, hey, this is your piece of the pie. This is the piece of your fight. I want you and the non-commissioned officers to hit this, fix it, and ensure that we are successful as an armor organization. And it worked out because everybody was out there. They were on their P's and their Q's, and they were ensuring that the fight continued and our commanders can be commanders and the non-commissioned officers can get through and just punch through the heart of the matter of the problem and fix it for them.
I know you've heard this phrase throughout the Army, where amateurs talk tactics and professionals talk logistics.
I have, yes.
And then you and I have talked a couple times that I find the sustainment enterprise and the sustainment warfighting function to be a very interesting dynamic. All the other warfighting functions, they're accountable to the commanders at echelon. And I always find sustainment a little bit different, where I say the sustainment enterprise is responsible to the commanders, but it is accountable to the command sergeant majors. And you tried something new out here. The brigade as a whole, I went back in time a little bit and ran a consumption-based sustainment enterprise, which I thought was extremely interesting. And I don't know if you want to elaborate on some of that, because what I thought was eye-opening is when I did the senior NCO AR, 90% of your first sergeants were completely happy with sustainment. They were getting class 1, class 3, class 5, class 8, and class 9 on a predictable level. And that, my friend, is something that my challenge is. I learned a lot in my rotation with the sustainment enterprise, but just to watch the growth and how good you guys did it is very impressive.
No, absolutely. And I give the credit where credit is due, and that is to the non-commissioned officers, right? We talked about approaching NTC when it came to logistics a little different. Talked about it. We sat down. We had our meetings. And we wanted to give it a shot. It worked because, to your point, everybody had what they needed. It was predictable. We were able to give the logisticians the ability to do the equations of, like, I've consumed such amount of fill in the blank. Now you do the math to know what it is that I'm supposed to be receiving. That way we're not hauling back extra ammunition, extra fuel, water, you name it. We were pretty precise. Obviously, no one is perfect. We are a learning organization because everybody should want to learn. And that is what we're doing. And now we're taking that feedback with us and putting it through our SOPs and ensuring that we're validating everything correctly with the NCOs and our officers. I think that if we do that together, we're going to be more successful moving forward. But yes, we tried something different. Consumption-based logistics has been around for quite some time. And in the box here at NTC, it seems like that can be a way. And it worked out so far for us.
And what I really liked about it, you know, I don't know where you came up with the idea from, but really effective. And as I kind of peeled the onion back to see how consumption-based logistics, like what's the critical aspect of it, I kind of got two areas, and I just want to see if I'm seeing it right away. The most critical is the first line report of a log stat that's driven by your NCO core that tells the honest truth of what they have on hand and what they're going to LD with. And then after that, I'm going to say first sergeant owned company XO operated system, where over your last 8 to 12 hours, what you've consumed by commodity, and then that kind of got rolled up into your Brigade S4, into your BSA that just did the math. And what I kind of thought was very interesting is you guys weren't looking for the perfect solution. You weren't looking for 100% commodities on hand. 70 to 80% was good enough, and that allowed you about 30 to 34 hours of freedom maneuver.
Oh, that's correct. That's correct. It's interesting. We both see it the same way. Probably we've been tanking and we've been doing this Army thing for quite some time, but that is absolutely what we focused on. We wanted to make sure we weren't storing additional stuff. So if you don't use consumption-based logistics, now you're just storing. I need more fuel. I'm going to get more bullets. I'm going to grab this. I'm going to grab that. And now you have extra. Now you can't use it. You can't haul it. Instead of being honest with ourselves, having that young NCO tell you, this is what I've shot, or this is how much fuel I currently have. This is what I'm going to LD with if I am not resupplied, doing the math, the percentage that I need, not what I want, meaning extra, but what I need to LD. And to your point, that was about the amount of hours that it would take, 35, 36 hours, and we would continue moving. And as long as we kept that same type of reporting through the same channels, we were able to sustain the fight that way.
Yeah, and you guys also did, and I might say this wrong because it's non-doctrinal, it's part of how you operated your sustainment enterprise. As you guys were going through your collective training tables for your maneuver elements, you guys also did a form, and I'm going to use the term pioneered, some sustainment tables for your BSA.
When we went out into our preparation to come out to NTC, we concentrated on ensuring we brought out doctrine, and we went through and had our checklists, and we make sure they were validated through the NCOs and officers. We ran tables over and over again, and we ensured that we were hitting the mark, getting close. If we weren't close enough, we went back to the drawing board and we were looking at what percentage we would need in order to continue the fight. And it'll never be 100%. You're looking 80%, 75%. That's good enough to keep moving. And that will sustain you if your reports are accurate based on consumption, not based on what you want.
Yeah, and I think you guys are putting together an article now that we've gone through the training thing and a CTC rotation, generalities. And I will tell you that I'm pumped that you guys are doing that. I look forward to reading the article when it comes out in a few months, because I think you guys are on to something that may just get our operational reach a little bit farther, because you and your commander are driving a training plan and you are assuming it's a known that 75% is good enough. We don't need to be at 90 or higher. And I think that's incredibly powerful. And you know, you guys just had a phenomenal rotation out here. Ton of aggression in that Gray Wolf Brigade that you guys have, war machines, as I call it, and it was such a joy to watch. So kind of wrapping it up here, you know, I just want to give a hearty thanks to Sergeant Major Polito for his time and his exceptional insight. I'm pumped for the future of the Army and the innovative ways in which we are preparing for the future. As always, our observer, coach, and trainers are on the Gray Wolf team. You know, and I invite you to ask us for latest products and TTPs. And I hope that you kind of help other people subscribe to our TAC Talks, right? Like the gauntlet is strictly for warfighting. I'm not here to talk about hair standards or 670-1, like what the American Army can do or what we have on the cutting edge just to make us better to win the first fight. So with that, I'll throw it over to you, Sergeant Major Polito, for closing comments.
So first off, I want to thank your team, right? The ops group is an amazing team full of professionals. So we couldn't have asked for a better opportunity to come here and showcase what we learned at the home station, come here and learn our lessons from your team and be able to apply those in the future. So thank you to you and your team. We really appreciate your guys' time, your coaching, your mentoring, and we look forward to our next rotation as we hopefully get better and we continue to drive the war machine that is Gray Wolf.
And you know, thanks for listening to Thinking Inside the Box with Sergeant Major Polito, Gray Wolf 7, where the Gray Wolf Brigade's motto stands true.
Win every fight. We'll be right back.